What is up, group members? Welcome to the pod. I'm licensed psychologist Dr. J.
And I'm licensed clinical social worker Kristen Gingrich.
And I'm licensed clinical psychologist Dr. Kristen Casey. I don't know who's next.
And I'm licensed psychologist Dr. Jessica Raven.
Well, you know what's next. It's the 100th episode live. Oh my goodness. We're so glad you're here with us live on the gram. You're listening on a boat somewhere. That one person who is just got completely freaked out right now. They're like, how did he know? But we've done 100 episodes of this pod.
Crazy.
A lot of people said we'd only last 10 apps at best.
That was you.
It was me. Spread rumors. I said it everywhere possible. I'm like, this isn't going to work. They're the worst, blah, blah, blah. I need to know off the jump before we get to these great questions. Tell me your favorite episode of the 99 to choose from.
This is so fun. That was such a good question.
I don't know if this is the recency effect, but I'm going to say Cody's episode on schizophrenia.
That was good.
I wish I was that one.
I will always say the sleep episode.
I knew you were going
to say
that.
To this freaking day, that sleep episode is probably my most favorite one, just because I felt like it was such a balance of like the education and chaos. And I just,
Was there balance?
Yes.
That was my favorite episode too, though. Yeah, hands down.
It was so good.
It was good.
The ones that stick out for me, we did the compassion episode live down here in Boca. Like live meaning in person.
I do remember. Yeah.
It's so much easier in person. Like,
it was so much
fun. If we all had to move to a state together, I don't know. I guess we'd choose Maine, but I really appreciate being there live in person. The other app that really resonated was Epidemic of Isolation and Loneliness.
Mm-hmm. Like, that was a good one.
Where that conversation went, I was like, yeah, it made me think about things about technology and COVID and, all the things.
Justin, you say you want to move to Maine. We just got a foot and a half of snow week.
Justin doesn't want to move to Maine.
Stop doing that. It's April 9th.
I didn't do it. Trust me.
It's your fault.
You need to talk to the people up there in Maine and be like, you know what? It's April flowers time. It's not April snow. That's not how the rhyme goes. So it's illegal. Pass it through the state senate, whatever's up there, or the moose who gather together and talk about. But we're talking about mental health now, and we're glad all at this exact moment in time, 125 of you, probably at least half of which are family and friends, are here with us hanging out, some spam robots, but we're happy to answer any and all questions you have. And I believe I'm supposed to go first, which I have not even looked at the chat yet. So
you volunteered to go first. Don't say you're supposed to. You volunteered.
Yeah. People are putting their favorite eps in the chat. How about that?
I know.
Episode on suicidality. That one.
That was one of my favorite episodes as well. If we didn't have Cody, I think I would have said that.
Yeah, that was great. The health anxiety ep, sleep, ADHD. Gosh. Yeah, y'all are... I'm still in disbelief that we've gotten through 100 of these.
It's wild.
I'm just surprised we tolerated you for that long.
Yeah, I thought it was going to end pretty bad. It still can. I mean, there's always room.
There's still time.
Yeah, we'll see you all.
Yeah, we got a question in here from Taylor. I also like that someone identified themselves as a robot. Thank you for your transparency, Victoria. Tips for attachment with your therapist when having BPD. Totally made me off the jump think of our great episode with Dr. Courtney Tracy.
Yes.
All about BPD.
Such
so
a good
shout
episode.
Out to that. Any ideas? We got some DBT peeps in this group. What tips do you have for attachment with your therapist while having BPD? And for those that don't know, that means borderline personality disorder.
I think the biggest is having those conversations, like trying your hardest to just be open and honest, and talk about like, okay, and like when things are getting difficult, whether you're struggling to connect or over connect or anything in between, that you are talking about it. And that can be really hard, especially if you're feeling under connected with a therapist. But when you are open about it, it gives that ability for that therapist to take inventory, to be aware, to talk, like, and kind of process what's happening in their session so that they can best support you.
Well said. Yeah, because I think for people with BPD, the therapy relationship could feel really different and weird, you know, because it has boundaries. And I think that with relationships in general for people with BPD, it's hard to know those boundaries, you know, and it's hard to know exactly how to navigate those boundaries. So with therapy, I always notice it's like right off the jump, everybody's like, let me overcorrect and be like, you know, let me not say too much, you know. But I think really just being aware of how you're coming up and showing up in session. And then like Kristen said, talking to your therapist about it is probably the best thing.
Yeah, I love that. I think sometimes we overthink those aspects. Like I'm thinking about me and my own therapy at times. It's like you overthink the, I'm going to get the most out of this by showing up authentically. Even if I feel like, you know, we've disconnected or I don't know if you really care or, you know, I felt like whether it's this intervention or anything else didn't land well with me. Authenticity, anything you can bring into the room, your therapist is going to appreciate because it gives us a pivot point to know you better, understand like what's working, what's not working, and to truly offer that corrective emotional experience, which I think whether you have BPD or not is a great holding space of this person's going to get curious with me instead of just hitting me over the head with judgment or maybe backing away and not be, again, curious about where I'm coming from.
Okay. Why is setting boundaries so freaking hard? Why is it so hard, guys?
I think a lot of people perceive setting boundaries as being mean. And so people don't want to be mean, especially because we usually set boundaries or the people that we have the most difficulty setting boundaries with are the people closest to us. Mm-hmm. Our parents, our siblings, our partners, our best friends, and we worry about being mean. I think a lot of times too, we're not necessarily taught or modeled how to set boundaries. Mm-hmm. And so if you're just trying to like, I don't know, set a boundary, but really don't know what that looks like, it can be really hard as well.
Too, it's like a lot of us don't want to hurt others. Yeah. And I think that's the tough thing with boundaries. It's like sort of like when you put up a fence, like you're not going to be surprised when things like blow against the fence, like come against the fence or block things out. But when it's another human and they're disappointed in us, they're like, you know, this makes me feel hurt or any type of way. It's just hard to absorb that and understand that, yeah, like my boundaries are for me protecting myself. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to agree with them. You might not like them, but these are my boundaries for a reason. I also think because you have to repetitively like state them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most of our situations where we're putting on boundaries, it's not like, oh, I put down the boundary and it was all good. It's like, you have to reiterate. You're like, listen, you can't talk to me that way. Or, you know, I'm not going to be treated like this, whatever the boundary might be. But it's like, you're constantly like reinforcing and coming back to in most situations where you're putting down a boundary. I wish it was just like one and done, but that tends not to be the case.
Well, and I think it's important for boundaries is like reminding yourself and sometimes reminding the other person, like I'm setting this boundary so that I can continue to have you in my life.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
Like boundaries are set because I want to continue to have you in my life and I'm setting an expectation for that. And I think that that sometimes is a really hard concept for some people to grasp, especially the person who's having the boundary being set towards, because again, they see it as, oh, you're doing something to me versus no, I'm trying to keep you here.
Yeah. Do I go next? The question?
Yes.
Okay. So we had one. Sorry, y'all. I'm like not here today. Natster. Okay. What is the recommended when dealing with anxious attachment in a new relationship? I'm 6 months in and it has been hard. So when I think about it right off the jump, there's no like recommended way to go about it. You know, it depends. Typical psychologist's answer. It depends. But I think you being aware of it is like the first step of like, okay, I know that I have anxious attachment. How am I coming off and how do I want to show up in this relationship? And whatever that gap is, usually in therapy, we could try to meet that gap. But that's kind of the first thought that I had. Anybody else have any other thoughts?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to pull a Justin and say, get curious about where the anxious attachment comes from. And when I've worked with individuals entering new relationships and a lot of past traumas or insecurities are coming up from past relationships, one, identifying
that where this comes from, but also that this relationship is not the same as your past relationship. I love what K10, you said about like, how do I want to show up? How are things different? Are there certain similarities? What are my trigger points for these things? So just kind of getting curious within yourself and within your relationship and being open with your partner about those things mm-hmm. as well.
So important.
Yeah, I definitely think that's ideal. Like mm-hmm. that you can be open with your partner about, hey, these are the things I kind of struggle with. And these are the things I'm sort of working on in growth areas. That's always ideal, that we can grow together with somebody and not have to like mask and be completely separate. I think that creates a lot of tension. But I also mm-hmm. think like having spaces and places where you can kind of process what you're experiencing, what's going on for you. Yes, it's nice if you have the privilege to go to therapy. I think a lot of people do this in journaling. I think a lot of people do this by talking to their friend. I think having the space where sometimes you need to be like, okay, what might be my shiz going on here? And what might be sort of activated maybe by my partner, maybe something we need to like work on between the two of us. But sometimes separating that and having the space to process is so key. And again, it doesn't have to be therapy. It might be with a friend. It might be through journaling. But especially when we're working on any sort of attachment style things, sometimes exactly what Jess was saying, it's more related to our history. And then sometimes we have things we're like, no, see, this communication, maybe we need to, mm-hmm. it would be better if we could improve and come together to kind of work on this.
So the Trauma Llama asks, advice for feeling safe in trauma therapy when one of your traumas was unethical treatment in therapy.
My first thought is maybe there's a rush to feel safe, you know, right off the jump, and you might not feel safe, and that's okay. You know, talking to your therapist about it, because I think if that's kind of the cornerstone, trust is everything. So even be able to process that trauma in more depth, you kind of have to talk around it a little bit too, mm-hmm. And make sure that you feel 100% safe. I actually, one of my really, really good friends had a situation like that happen to her in her own therapy. And it was hard for her to even tell her therapist that, you know, like this is the actual trauma that I want to work on. You know, it was difficult for her because she just didn't feel safe. So if you're able to have the courage and feel at least a little bit of safety to bring it up, that's usually the best thing in therapy. Everybody's different though.
I feel like my theme is like being open and honest, but I think, you know, if you've had negative experiences, especially traumatic experiences in therapy, being upfront about that with your new therapist. I know something I always do at every intake is ask about past experiences in therapy, what went well, what didn't go well. Obviously, at the intake, you may not feel super comfortable, but I think a way that you can feel safe is being honest about the things that made you feel unsafe. And having that open dialogue from the get-go so you don't feel like maybe you're hiding something from your new therapist or like you can't open up because of potential re-traumatization. So as much as you feel comfortable, even if it's just at the beginning, if you don't feel comfortable stating the trauma, saying like, hey, I had a really traumatic experience mm-hmm. in therapy and that's making me feel hesitant, because you and your therapist can talk around some of that, like, how does it feel then showing up to these sessions? Like, you know, are there certain things I'm doing that are unhelpful for you? Things like that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, being open in that conversation, even if you don't want to share the details. Yeah, I was thinking the exact same lines. Y'all, thanks for being here. Thanks for dropping your questions. We're 100th episode in, if you're just joining us. So stoked to be here. Can't believe we've done that many times meeting together as a little collective here.
Wild.
How do you end therapy with your therapist after you feel like you don't feel like you need it anymore? Great question here from Krista.
I think it's I was going to say, like, I think it's talking about it, like saying to your therapist, hey, I think we've met my treatment goals. Mm-hmm. I think it's time for me to try life without this. And that can be scary and all of that. But eventually, you know, the hope is that you don't need us anymore. The hope is that you can kind of take those steps to go out. And if you need to come back, come on back. We're here. But I think it's just saying like, hey, I think I've met my treatment goals. Can we reflect mm-hmm. on all the work that we've done together? And have that conversation.
Yeah. And just to normalize, like, I'm a firm believer in every therapist you meet has something different to help you with, and they're going to help you in a different way. And that's okay. You might have saturated the therapy that you have with this particular therapist, and there is nothing wrong with that. That's like literally the point, right? Of going to therapy. It's like, hey, we're going to eventually get to a point where this is not helpful, effective, or useful anymore. It's totally normal. But I think broaching that conversation could be really hard for people because they don't want to hurt the therapist's feelings. And then like you think about, oh my gosh, we've developed this relationship. What if they don't think I need to graduate right now? Like there might be all of those thoughts. So talking about it is definitely the best thing. And it's a good opportunity to practice assertiveness whenever I think about these things. And if they're scary, you know, if you trust your therapist, you could always practice your skills in therapy. That's totally normal. And you could even say that. Mm-hmm. Like I've told my therapist before, Alex, I'm practicing a skill. So just like, and it's hard for me. So like just, and I'll give her like a heads up, and it usually always goes well. So
yeah, to connect just something that Amanda dropped in of like, what if you don't know what healed looks like? I think this is a lot of times when we experiment, I think this is something that comes into therapy, that whether it's with individual differences, all of us come from different cultures, backgrounds, family, have different goals, you know, strengths and weaknesses, all the things. I think a lot of times you test that by like, you know, maybe we meet weekly. Now we'll meet, you know, once every 2 weeks, or I'm going to just put a session out 3 weeks from now and see how I feel and see how it goes. Mm-hmm. But experimentation is a big part of psychotherapy. Yeah. I think sometimes whether it's the short content like we're into making right now, or just people being really attention grabby through social media of like, this will help you with X, Y, or Z, like being very definitive. I think that's just not the case. I think we have good research to back up techniques and things that we do, but a lot of things are experimentation of trying, see how it lands with you, what needs tweaked, how's this working. It's just a lot of being able to test it, like KBI was saying before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and going off of that, Justin, of this concept of like, how do I know what healed looks like? One, it looks different for everybody, but one thing I like to ask my clients is like, what would indicate to you that you are doing better? Because the goal I always say for people, if they're like, I never want to have anxiety, I'm like, well, that's not realistic. Like at some point we are all going to have anxiety. So if you can identify, you know, I want to be able to do X, Y, and Z, and maybe that's healed for you at that point in your life, or reflecting back on how far you've come, like Justin just said, like experimenting, like what skills do I have? You know, as we spread out sessions, okay, yeah, I am more capable or competent than I thought I was. Or, ooh, this thing came up that I didn't realize was a thing. But I'm of the mindset of healing is always going to be a journey, because it's not like you heal from one thing and nothing else is ever going to happen. Like there's going to be obstacles and challenges in life. So for you, what does it look like to manage those obstacles and challenges sufficiently where you feel like you're functioning to the best of your ability overall?
Totally. That's really well said. Yeah.
Okay. See, y'all are picking all the serious questions. You know me. I don't know. Julie Paints wants to know, we know everyone's thoughts on muffins versus donuts. Muffins rule, point for muffin. But where does everyone stand on cake versus pie?
Oh, it's cake. A no-brainer. It is cake all it's day cake long. All day.
No.
All day.
No.
All day.
No. Pie, baby.
Ew.
No, it's
pie. Ew.
All the pies. Absolutely. I'm like,
okay, what kind of pie do you guys like?
Yeah, what kind of pie?
Okay, see, now y'all come alongside. Okay, I see it.
We got to process. Hit me with the
deets. Like, are you eating apple pie? Like, like pumpkin pie?
Blueberry, so you would... cherry, pumpkin, I mean, peach, cobbler, whatever kind of pie you got for me, please.
I would probably take a good pecan pie over a lot of cakes. But in just general, I would choose cake over a pie.
It surprises me and doesn't surprise me at the same damn time.
We know she has a pecan pie tattoo. Like, 100%.
Jess, what's your favorite ice cream? Sleeve.
Just what's Jess's favorite ice cream?
Is it grape nut?
Ew, what?
I feel like it would be that.
What is grape nut? I don't even know what grape nut is.
Grape nut?
What is that?
That can't be real.
It is.
I like chocolate peanut butter ice cream.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. But it's a 3-1 on cake versus pie here.
You're voted off the island.
All right. Not, yeah. See
you. Justin,
y'all.
You don't strike me as a pie guy.
No.
I just love it. It's honestly, cake gets, like, a good cake isn't dry, but I've had more dry cakes than I'd like to admit. And I'd be like, pie never dries me out, baby. Like, it's got such a good filling, you know what I mean? But sometimes cakes, it's just, you know.
I don't know.
Just doesn't do it.
I'm cake all day. Like, I don't care. Yeah.
I just have so many questions for you, Justin. Like, are pies, like, very common in Florida?
Oh, yeah. Like, we got key lime pies all over the place.
That makes sense.
Mm. Yeah, but no, we got a lot of pies down here.
Grape nut is the over 65 of ice cream.
That's why she asked.
Yo, I can't. I'm gonna try grape it nut? I have to try this now.
Like, What is a grape nut?
We're going to have to do a Google Scholar short on this. This is going to be research coming in the future.
Hold on, let me Google. I feel like nut.
The only pie that I get excited about is pumpkin pie. That's like it.
Yes. Or like, yes. Grape nut and pecan pie give the same vibes as Raisin Bran cereal.
They actually do. Yeah.
That's a
grape nuts. Mm-mm. Actually contain neither grapes nor nuts. It's wheat and barley.
That sounds fucking terrible.
I'm literally buying this like ASAP tomorrow.
Wait, we all have to buy it and try it. Absolutely. And, like, actually give some thoughts.
I'm pretty sure I have some in my
It was created in 1897 by Charles William Post, who used a coffee grinder to turn a flat sheet of the baked cereal into tiny kernels that resembled grape seeds.
We appreciate the fact that Jess is bringing research into fucking ice cream flavors. I cannot handle this. We are all so different, and I live for it.
Brand.
Anyways, oh, God. Okay.
See, this is why I love the fun questions, because then the unhinged comes out, and that's my favorite part.
I love it.
That's where you live. That's where we come visit
Someone
you.
Someone needs to put me back in my cage.
Yeah, we visit you in the...
Like...
In your attic, Quasimodo.
Yeah, your attic.
Put me in one of my, like, Harry Potter enclaves. It's, like, closet. Like, that's a closet right there.
That's the vibes you got.
Stick my bed in there. It's fine. Yeah.
Oh, my God. If y'all are joining, ask us anything.
Could be anything.
It's your turn to pick a question.
I have nothing to go off.
Ask us some questions.
Just wait.
It can be fun. It can be serious. It can be directed towards one of us. If you have a specific question you want to ask someone.
Wait. Amanda wants to see the statistics of the average consumer 60 of
plus.
A grape nut.
They probably collect Social Security.
We need the demographics. It's got to be a good end, though, or Jess is not even going to look at that research. Like, it has to be a solid end. Oh, my God, y'all.
Will the Bruins beat the Canes? I don't know. You'll have to ask Oliver. He'll probably.
Oh, well, that's my friend Meg. Hi, Meg.
Hi, Meg.
Thanks for joining.
Okay, we got one.
Okay.
Advice for new therapists. This was a good call.
I know. Use your supervision. Use it. Talk about the hard things. Talk about the things that you're like, oh, I don't want to talk about that. Talk about them. Talk about the burnout. Talk about the struggles. Talk about the countertransference. Talk about those things. Because your supervisor is there to help you walk through that. You don't have it all together. We don't even have it all together. And we've been in the field for a while. But you get supervision for a reason. Utilize it. Like, I was lucky and I had a supervisor who called my ass out so many times for not utilizing supervision the way that I should until she taught me how to use it. And I was like, oh, I've been wasting time. Cool. And I finally engaged in that. And I really think that that has made me into the therapist that I am, because I was able to grow from things that I was doing. Not that they were bad, but I could grow from them because, ooh, they just needed some fine tuning. And I wasn't alone in it.
You think me and Justin were like,
you go, Justin.
You go.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I love that advice. The first thing that came to me is that what you learn in grad school from a textbook and applying it to real life are going to look very different.
Two different things.
And I think I can recall Justin talking about this on the podcast, and I think I have too at certain times about like you have your like CBT manual and you're like going through or never when you're learning it. And then you go into clinical practice and you're like, that doesn't feel comfortable. Like humans are much more complex and fluid than a 12 session manual. So know that you don't have to do everything like perfectly. Some of the best advice I got early on in like clinical work of grad school from one of my supervisors was when I was freaking out about like not knowing all the techniques and stuff. He was like, just showing up and listening is still therapeutic. Mm-hmm. And that really helped me. But it looks different in clinical practice. And even if you don't require supervision anymore, still seek out supervision and consultation. Like,
oh, yeah.
K-10 and I consult with one another very frequently.
Yeah. She's like, I have a clinical case. You ready? I'm like, hit me. This is where I thrive. It's amazing. It's so fun. It's so fun. But I want to echo everything that everybody else has said. And I think as a new therapist, you feel like you want to fill the space and all that stuff. Like you just sit back, you kind of lean in. It's about process. It's about creating space. And you just showing up is also enough too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's our job could be hard sometimes, you know? So it's really important to remember that you just showing up is important too.
Yeah. For better or for worse, being a therapist, you're a lifelong student.
And oh, always.
I think that's something to reflect on when if you're thinking about coming into the field, like you're never going to stop learning and growing. Like, I don't care what orientation you just jive with and love. You're always learning new ways to think about things, new cultural, you know, pieces, parts, like reflecting on you, who you are in the room and, you know, the political climate, how that impacts us. Mm-hmm. Like you're always learning and growing. Like that's mm-hmm. never going to stop. Yeah. And I think in some ways, sometimes that tips over and can be a little exhausting. Like you're like, I just want to stop for a moment. But the good news is you shouldn't ever figure this out because the nuance of showing up for another person is always growing and changing, especially again, as like our country and political culture and all these other things are growing and changing. So is this work.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I think it's important to reflect on.
Well said.
Luis Gala asks, if time/money wasn't a limitation, what's something you'd love to learn about a topic, a skill, planning, an elaborate heist, etc.? I totally did not read that all the way through when I picked
an elaborate heist. Count me the fuck in. Yes.
I was just like, read it. I was like, hold up. That's what that says. Yeah. Mm. So what would you all love to learn? I feel like KBI has some unhinged answer because she's just laughing to herself. It's like, what are you doing?
Let her cook. Let her cook.
Oh, my. I don't know if we should. Turn off the oven.
Turn the pot off. It's over.
She's crying. What is happening?
I just fucking can't. I just was like, I would love to learn where my mom got the audacity.
Doug. You're always ready. Like, you're always ready.
Oh, my gosh.
Ready and willing.
Oh, people are saying, I want to learn to play drums. Oh, this is so cool.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
No, the first thing I thought of like, I got the privilege of studying abroad in Mexico for 3 months through the summer, mm-hmm. and it was just, like, phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Like, it's such a privilege when you can travel and not do mm-hmm. touristy crap, mm-hmm. but, like, actually learn something about other cultures, how they think about life and death and just the nuance of how they live each day. Like that is like the ultimate privilege to travel and immerse yourself in another culture. I'm so glad I did that. That was the last thing I did in my undergrad. And it like completely changed my whole perspective about like who we are as Americans and like sometimes propaganda and like mm-hmm. this beautiful country to our south, Mexico and their culture. Like it was just amazing. So like, after that experience, I'm like, you could send me probably to any country and I would love to immerse myself. Mm-hmm. Like, but again, it's a privilege to do so. And like that was connected with the university down there. That was amazing. Mm-hmm. So
that sounds so legit.
It was, like life changing, like no doubt. Yeah. Like, yeah. Cause it changes your worldview of things. Immediately. It does.
You become less ethnocentric too. Like you kind of consider culture in a different way too. When you immerse yourself like that, that's incredible. If I could learn, I'm trying to like slim it down because I have so many like ideas. But if I just had endless time, I think that I would want to go to like really cool places and just paint. Like I would just want to learn mm-hmm. how to paint from like different places and just see how they use, you know, different tools and mediums and stuff like that. Cause I think that, you know, the training that we could get here, you know, about painting and stuff like that, if you want to go like the structured route, it's great. And I think it's incredible. But I think going somewhere else to learn would be really fun. I don't really know what it would look like, but it's just a vibe I have. Jess, what about you?
So when you were like, I have so many things to like think of, let me slim down. And I was like, I have nothing in my brain. I'm like, what would I learn? I mean, honestly, I wish like retrospectively, I took foreign languages more seriously.
Yeah.
Cause like I've taken a lot throughout my life. Because when I lived in Scotland, obviously in Europe, they're very like, they teach languages very young. So like I've done French and German and Spanish and Latin. And as an adult, I've lost pretty much, like I can speak a little Spanish. So I think if I had unlimited time and resources, I would take learning multiple languages more seriously, which comes mm-hmm. into, and Justin, you actually gave me this idea when you're talking about being immersed in culture, because really I have found when I was privileged enough to travel while living over there, like you learn a lot more language wise being immersed in the culture.
Day to day. Yeah.
Yeah. So KBI, other than your mom's audacity, anything else you want to add?
How to be relaxed. That would be really nice.
Oh, I should have done that one.
I would say if I had like unlimited time and resources, I learned to do. I don't even know.
You would learn all the numbers of the Mariners.
I'd probably fucking take hockey lessons at this point so I can understand what the fuck is going on. For anybody new here, my kid's hyper-focus is hockey and sports. And I'd probably learn sports, honestly. Like at this point, it would probably be like, I would hire some jockey person who's really good. I'd probably hire Caitlin Clark to explain basketball to me. Like, help me figure this out because I have no idea and this is going to be my life and I need to know what's happening.
Totally
sounds good.
Is it me?
Yes.
Am I?
You're the problem. It's you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I even said it like that too. Maggie, love this question. Tips for getting past the shame and stigma of a mental health diagnosis, especially when you want to be a therapist yourself.
For what it's worth, we're all mentally ill, you know? So welcome to the club. I don't know. Let's just want to start it there.
We got more than a little something over here.
Yeah, yeah. KBI's got 90% of it and we all just split the other 10. But
she's not wrong though. At least, yeah.
But I just wanted to start by saying that. Mm-hmm. Like it's more common than you think in our field, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, when you also have life experience, you actually offer that to your clients. Not that you talk about yourself in session, but you have the lens that somebody else might not have if they haven't gone through something or if they don't have a diagnosis or they don't know what it might be like to struggle with the stigma. Cause a lot of our clients do too. You'd be surprised. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, didn't really give any advice, but hopefully it's words that help you feel better.
I think a lot of this shame and stigma starts to dissipate when you are around others like ourselves who are very casual about talking about our mental health and the things we struggle with. Like that's part of the reason I love this group so much is like I could start talking about my OCD and I know I'm not going to be judged at all. Like I could be talking about my intrusive thoughts and I get nothing but validation, support. And I say this a lot, but when you're in spaces and groups of people where stigma is the lowest, humor comes into play. Mm-hmm. Because you know, we're not judging. We can even laugh at these things sometimes. Like, why is my brain like this? Why am I like fixated on this thing? Mm-hmm. Like, why am I having all these thoughts? But like, it is great to find the community of people where stigma is low and you can talk openly. I think stigma mm-hmm. grows in dark places where we hide it and feel like we have to stuff it down. So whether that's, you know, at a university counseling center, online support groups, or anywhere, like I hope you find the spaces where you can just talk openly about the shit you struggle with, the things you experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only thing I would add to that is, you know, reflecting on where the shame and stigma comes from. Mm-hmm. Like, is it internal to you? Do you feel like having a diagnosis means that somehow you are not going to be a good therapist? Or is the stigma coming from other people saying, like, how could you possibly mm-hmm. become a therapist if you had X, Y, or Z? Because, you know, like K-10 said, you know, well, the four of us here all have had our own struggles, but I don't know a single person who has gone into the mental health field that has not had their own struggle of some sort, whether it be them or someone close to them. So I would just, you know, reflect on where this comes from and try to break down, challenge, unlearn as much as you can. Hey, Jackie.
What's up, Jackie?
Whose turn is it?
It's my turn. So
yes, it is.
This one's fun. Again, if you could choose a tattoo for anyone in the podcast and they cannot say no, what would you get? What would you make them get, and why?
Can I do Justin?
KBI is getting a bird. KBI is getting a bird.
Guys, I was at the mall the other day, and these seagulls like were engulfing my car, and I was like, "This is like the damn." Freaking crows. And I'm like, why are you guys like, why? But yes, would it be a
they're just, I don't know, I just gulls. Took one for the they're not called seagulls.
They're like my mother to just,
and Justin does have a gull tattoo.
Yeah,
he does.
See? I want to add to KBI's tattoo though, because I feel like you need to get a gull, and then you have to have like the bubble where it says something, and it has to say frustrated in the bubble.
Literally.
Because she can't say it. And it has to be the spelling in which you say it. Like, it has to be the wrong way.
I can't even say that. Frustrated?
It's like the chest tattoo with no regrets.
No regrets.
No regrets.
Not even one letter, except it says
You say frustrated, right?
She says frustrated.
Frustrated.
There's no R.
Frustrated.
She just.
Frustrated.
Yeah.
We're frustrated.
Yeah, it's okay to make up your own words.
I'm frustrated that you guys don't pronounce it the right way.
Yeah, there's definitely no R in
there. Phonetically speaking, I wish you pronounce it incorrectly.
I would give Justin a dolphin tattoo. Because I know that he loves dolphins, but it would absolutely be a tramp stamp.
Absolutely. with the word perfect above it. Sorry, I had to.
But it would be a really
and it has to be in color.
It would be a really artistic low-rise tramp stamp that just peek with it
like watercolor.
Like the fin would peek out of his pants.
More mad about it says perfect than anything you just described.
Yeah.
Like I might need a beautiful dolphin jumping out of the river. I don't even know.
And I would just give Jess a beautiful sleeve tattoo just because she just needs that.
Just because I'm left out.
I honestly need her to have a sleeve tattoo on the left arm.
She needs the single teardrop just to add that mystery.
She needs the rose right here.
But yeah. In spite, I just want something subtle. So when she's in her little southern accent, like, oh, sweet pea. That she's just got that little something that makes people think, like.
When have I ever called anybody sweet pea?
You're going to start today.
Okay. Oh, gosh. What would we give K-10?
Always the toss-up.
I'd probably something space. Like, I'd want her to stare at her hand give her a with, black like, hole. A deep space. A black hole. Like, just a black spinning hole. On her so hand.
Fucking weird.
Just to talk about it to people, like, y'all ever see this?
I would put it. Yeah. I would probably just give her the Tessie logo.
No, please don't. No, I like the Tesla. I don't like who made it. Like, let's just be real here. Like,
it's fair.
Just,
we can separate please. That. We can separate the two.
Oh,
yeah. No, K-10, you're hard.
That was a good one.
That was a really good one.
Doesn't even have space left.
Space is gonna be my next one. Actually, space. It is. Is it my? It's my turn, right?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Somebody asked, what do you suggest for someone that's struggling to calm down their anxiety? So basically
how to work with their anxiety, how to reduce it.
The internet.
Yes. This is a perfect case study example.
Yeah, Jess, what did you
do? So for those of you that don't know, we were prepping and I was talking to KBI and suddenly she's like, I can't hear you. And my Wi-Fi went out and there's no bad weather or anything. And so I had to get my husband, who was putting our child to bed, to come fix the router for – it felt like an eternity. It was probably only 10 minutes or 15 minutes. How long was I out?
Like 10 minutes.
It was 10 minutes, but we had you scale your anxiety when you returned.
Yeah, and I said it was 8.
And you gave us an 8 out of 10 of your anxiety. What lowered your anxiety?
Deep breathing. Okay. I was doing some deep breathing.
Yeah.
You all reassuring me that none of you actually cared. You're all like, we're just chilling.
Yeah. Peer support.
Problem solving when I like utilize my resources with my husband. But yeah, I mean, and we say this all the time on the podcast, like it depends. I think, you know, skills for anxiety are so individual. For me, I often find and usually recommend with my clients doing like body-based work, so deep breathing or more somatic interventions at first, because if your body is very dysregulated, it's hard to calm your mind down. So deep breathing, progressive muscle relaxation, mindfulness, stretching, anything to get your body more regulated, because if it's more regulated, especially if you're more in your head about anxiety, once your body's calmer, it's easier to challenge your anxious thoughts. Mm-hmm.
That was beautiful, Jess.
Thanks.
I also think it's good to get curious about like what might be driving some of this anxiety. A lot of us have this biological root that's there, but other times it's surprising as a therapist that you start to narrow in for people. It can be something like caffeine increasing your symptoms. It can be something like a lack of sleep. It can be something like a lot of suppressed emotions. Sometimes it's a lack of movement throughout the day. Like the amount of variability that you'll start to notice, and of course run these like in between session experiments with people, it is vast what creates anxiety reduction for each individual. But I like kind of going to and assessing, you know, what their day-to-day lives look like. Because there are research-based things that we know tend to keep anxiety more in check and things that tend to create dysregulation.
So we got this really good question, which I don't know if we can actually answer, but I think it would be a good conversation. So James Davis says, when are we going to update the diagnostic process for ADHD to be better at detecting ADHD in young girls?
I mean, how many adult women, I don't have this stat, but now I need to know, how many adult women in the last 5 years have gotten diagnosed?
It's like 50% on this podcast.
Well, K-10 was diagnosed in childhood.
Oh, you were?
Right?
I was young.
Yeah.
I was young.
25%. Yeah.
I think it's like
but access to if we're going off of females, 33%.
Yeah. It's wild.
I don't know when it is, but this is from National Geographic. The number of women aged 23 to 49 receiving an ADHD diagnosis nearly doubled from 2020 to 2022.
Wow.
Yeah, which is great in a way that we're trying to catch back up. And be like, the norms for these tests are trash. Mm. Like they're just so stereotypically focused on men and little boys that it's not generalizable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fair question. Like it's a great assessment question like, what are we doing to capture the full spectrum of what ADHD is? Not just this hyperactive person who doesn't sit still.
Mm-hmm. It's so true.
Yeah. So I guess we don't have a answer, but I think all of us on this pod would say that we definitely need to reevaluate. And hopefully it looks like there's been some research looking at it, like actual research articles, like not just a National Geographic article. So hopefully with the rise in diagnosis, as we have that data, it will force the people that sit on the committee for DSMs to reevaluate.
I just want
to
like
or
have
test
a word
makers,
them.
You know, reevaluate symptoms. Oh, this is called epic research. I don't know what this is.
Check out APSARD. They're our best. Our best somebody time. Said that. Yeah, somebody said that too before. Yeah. Thanks for commenting that.
Justin.
Is it me? How did that happen?
Oh my goodness.
It goes in
I never
circle.
Know it's my turn either.
That came so fast. Well, I'm glad I just jumped at why can I read this handle at all? This question right here. Any mental health tips, sleep tips for night shift workers? Yo, I know where I'm asking this. Mm-hmm. I always feel like I'm, chat jumped, missing out when I'm sleeping during the day. And I always feel tired. Good thing we have the sleep goddess on this.
That would be her tattoo. A goddess. Sleeping.
Oh,
sleeping.
So cool.
Some Z's. For Remy's.
I love it.
We need it.
Oh my God. Your lack of Remy's. Don't want to call you out, but you know. For night shift workers, it's interesting. So it really depends on the shift that you have. If you have like a three to midnight shift, you have a swing shift, or you have like the traditional 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., you actually want to continue to keep that schedule. So I know that you feel like you're missing out, and it sounds shitty, but you kind of have to choose between, usually, not everybody, choose between do I want a social life and do I want to be tired and my circadian rhythm is going to be messed up, or do I want a consistent sleep cycle? It's kind of hard, you know, because a lot of people will say, hey, on the weekends, I want to stay up during the day. I want to see my friends. I want to go shopping when the stores are open and I can't. So you might have to make some sacrifices. So it's not the best advice, but what we have right now is trying to maintain that schedule the best way you can, because we do know that if you don't get consistent sleep every single day, that it does contribute to a whole host of issues as you age. Sleep is so essential for like mortality rates and proper functioning and cell and tissue repair. So if you're not getting the amount of sleep in the amount of time that your body needs it, it's usually not so helpful. And I used to work night shifts for a really short period of time when I worked in the ambulance, and I just feel your pain. I really do. I just want to validate. It's really hard. It's really hard to find a cycle that works for you. If you have friends that are night shift workers, I think sometimes it could be really helpful to kind of plan things with them if they're open to it. Like after your shift is over, kind of, you know, hanging out right after that. It's almost like you're hanging out after work sort of thing, kind of trying to make it more normal. I hope that helps.
Someone whose spouse has frequently fluctuated through all different shifts. Night, I will say the overnight has always been one of the hardest, but it's keeping it's so that hard. Structure. And the hardest part is asking the people in your life to also accommodate that. That's something that we had to do frequently. Was like, you know, he's not going to come to an 11 a.m. birthday party. He's not going to come. So you either need to accept that he's not going to come, or can we bump it back to 3 or 4 o'clock? We did lots of breakfast with people versus dinner. Those type of things, and just keeping that schedule. And it's funny because we actually just had this conversation not even a week ago, because he has new trainees at work who are talking about the exact same thing. They work weekend overnights, which is even worse. I think that is probably one of the worst shifts when you have a lot of family or friends who work a typical 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. And really just talking about, he said, he was like, you have to keep that schedule. You can every once in a while swing it if something is really important and you just take the loss. But you can't, that can't be a regular thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What I just want to highlight, what a tough balance between two things that we know are so important to longevity, like socialization and sleep. It's like, it really does feel like a rock and a hard place.
It usually is. I mean, it's just so hard. I mean, think about how hard it is just to get a decent night's sleep on a regular shift. I mean, it's difficult for most people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm an empire. Who wouldn't be in therapy if the people who should have gone to therapy just went to therapy in the first place?
Boy, I feel like you came ready.
Thanks, Mom. Thanks, Mom. Imagine all the therapy that I wouldn't need. If my mother just went to therapy, life would be grand. I wouldn't be as mentally ill.
You wouldn't be funny at all.
We wouldn't be friends, probably. I would not. I will say that's the one benefit is like that I am funny as fuck because of her.
Doesn't mean you had to go through that though. But yeah, yeah. You are funny. I got nothing. I'm gonna be real. I got nothing. I got
my brain is not working.
All right. Well, I got something. I got something okay, I think right. about Hit us with a it. Lot. There's a lot of things I think about a lot, but I think attention I think about a ton is the extreme, but like the pros and the cons of diagnosis in general. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Of how it can literally be life-changing for some and be completely limiting and putting someone in a box for others. Mm-hmm. And yet these patterns of symptoms and behaviors is like what a lot of this field is based on. And I've literally seen it limit and hold some people back. Well, and it's, mm-hmm. it's just something I think a lot about. Like I don't have a hill I'm willing to die on there, but I do think about that because I've seen it. I've seen people mm-hmm. be like, all my life I had ADHD and then I finally have a label for it. I'm like, I'm so grateful that I know this is, and then I've had other people have these labels on them and they just carry around shame or guilt or think mm-hmm. their life is like over. And as a therapist, you see both sides of that. And it's just something I think about. It's mm-hmm. nuanced like all things in this field, but that in particular, I think about.
Made me think of something that like, imagine too, like it goes back to kind of the original piece that I said too, was like, imagine if people were given the space to talk about their trauma when their trauma happened.
Mm.
And how much happened because of that. Because, I mean, the studies show that when individuals are given the opportunity to talk and process about what has happened to them, kind of right after it happened, the longevity of the symptoms, the impact of that is lower. And I always think like, imagine like kids who are given the space to talk with a supportive adult and given the space to talk about it without being shame or guilted and just being able to feel and experience and process how much pain and suffering people mm-hmm. wouldn't go through their whole life.
It's so true. Oh
my God.
What would
now
we do
that
for
you
work?
All are talking,
do
differently? I think my mental because health from an empire is insurance. And like, no, but literally, I mean, we were having this conversation today at work, especially Medicaid, not to directly call them out, but at least in South Carolina, like South Carolina Medicaid covers very little mental health services other than traditional outpatient. Even then, you have to like, and I've shared this story before. I remember years ago, I had to do a pre-auth for Medicaid for a patient who was recently diagnosed with a chronic illness, and insurance came back to me saying she does not need therapy. And I was like, what? Or even just like won't cover higher levels of care, and how insurance is supposed to increase access to mental health services, but actually limits in many ways, depending on the insurance you have, or that, you know, mental health care is a privilege. That's probably another thing I think about a lot. Mm. But yeah, I spend a lot of time thinking about insurance and the barriers there.
I'm gonna have to think on this deeply because I got nothing. I'm just gonna be honest. But I do have a question that somebody asked earlier because it's my turn, I hope.
It is your turn.
Okay. I want honest, raw, really raw answers here. Okay, we got to get vulnerable. Shake it off. Okay, ready? What does KBI stand for?
KBI stands for, I told you, okay? So,
koala
okay,
bear instructor.
Yeah, but here's the thing, guys. Here's the thing. So I always say there are only two things my mom gave me, right? Trauma and a love for baking, right? I've made videos on this all before. Like, it's the only two things, right? I didn't bake for a long period of time because I had, like, feelings about it. And I probably would say in the last kindled that as like my healing journey, because I really loved baking. It was something positive that we shared together. And I remember baking with her as like a kid and like learning all of these recipes and her just like teaching because she was a baker. Like that was her job. And I just remember being a kid and being like, wow, I love this. I love doing this. Like, what if we like did this? What if I had Kristen's Baking Institute? Like, how cool would that be?
Shut up. I can't. I'm done.
She messes with you guys every time. I thought I was going to get it out of her. I was like,
like,
we just
imagine
have to,
if
we just
I opened up a shop called Kristen's Baking Institute and she and her and I taught people how to bake. And then she turned out to be a trash human and that wasn't going to work. So we moved on.
I like this explanation the best because it pulled at heartstrings to really get people invested. Like this could actually be true.
I liked it the best because the letters were actually in order, unlike the first time we did a live.
I feel like it could have landed if I could. I feel like it could have landed.
Kicking it back.
I feel like it could have landed if I could have kept a straight face, but I just can't talk about my mom positively for that long of a time. So,
yeah, that was probably the longest I've ever heard. Probably.
Yeah. It was a good one. But yes, it stands for Kristen's Baking Institute.
And the next time you ask, you'll get a different answer.
We'll get a different answer every time.
Okay. Y'all, we're almost at an hour, which we're going to do this live for an hour. So I want to end with this question from Dr. Mac, because I think it's such a good question. What does your therapy session outfit say about you?
I'm in the midst of a wardrobe thing.
Which is hilarious because K10 literally just made a video today about throwing out all our cardigans.
They're done. They're trash. You know, I got to figure it out. I just have to start over.
Cool. I'll put on jeans and things like that. But I would say mine is pretty casual because that just came from community mental health where I'd go into people's homes. But I would just say it just says that I'm cash. I'm just here for we're just going to sit here. We're going to unpack it. It's going to get messy. We need to be able to move. Let's go.
I was going to say something kind of similar. Weirdly, I was thinking about this the other day of why do I feel so comfortable in all black, especially when I'm doing therapy? There's something about absorbing other people's stories, narratives, emotions. And it was weird because I was already thinking about this. I'm maybe there's something about it's being absorbed in the all black because white reflects back, black absorbs. Right. But I also I don't like to be constricted or confined. A lot of that is my OCD. The wearing a tie for me is I have to mentally get ready to wear a tie. So I don't like ties. I don't like jackets. I don't like any cardigan. I don't like that. So I like to be open and free and flowing. And I paid good money for these tattoos. Why? I can't cover up all the money I spent on these.
You wore all black because you're colorblind.
Well, that's also true.
I know when I'm wearing all black, I'm not mismatching. So you're right about that.
There are different shades of black, though.
They all kind of go, though.
Don't say that to me. They all kind of go. I'm thinking about that all night.
They all
kind of
go. They all go. You're fine.
He's going to go into his closet and be like,
I need help.
Jackie. Help me.
Jackie. Yeah, I get a lot of assistance with my color deficiencies.
Okay, Tim, what does your outfit say about you?
I don't know. I don't know what outfit I have right now. I'm just kind of, because I ditched the cardigans. I'm trying to figure it out. But I do have different types of styles when I'm an evaluator versus when I'm a therapist because I have two roles. When I'm an evaluator, I dress way more professionally because it's legal evaluations. But in therapy, I'm starting to experiment with not wearing cardigans and just kind of being casual. But I only do therapy through telehealth, so I only have to worry about a shirt. So for me, it's a little easy. I could just switch my shirt out, but that's why I feel so silly about the cardigan thing. I'm like, bitch, just switch it out. What is the problem? Why are you so attached? Let it go. I just had an epiphany the other day. I'm like, why am I so attached to these goddamn cardigans? And I just felt it was a uniform. When I put it on, I'm like, I'm a therapist now. But I'm a therapist without it and I'm going to survive. It's going to be fine. But I don't know what my therapy outfit looks like right now. So I'm still figuring it out. Jess, what about you?
So my first thought, because I am cardigan, shirt, pants, usually all the time. So I was like, okay, so I'm stereotypical. But the more I reflected, I do think my what I wear in therapy represents practicality. So for example, Mondays when I am completely outpatient, I am more likely to wear a dress because I don't really like pants. And dresses are more comfortable. But in the hospital, I wear pants only with pockets or a dress only with pockets because I have to carry my work cell phone and things around the hospital because I'm not sitting in one place. Yes, a cardigan is also a therapist uniform. Our hospital temperature is not regulated. If you've ever worked in a hospital, it can be freezing in a patient's room and then like hot in the thing. So you have to wear layers to, you know, make sure you're weather appropriate. So I think, yeah, it is more practicality. Comfortable shoes. I work with kids, so okay. I need to wear stuff I can get on the floor with.
I'm just thinking, yeah. I've never worn a dress to work ever in my entire life. Like the entirety of my career, I've never worn.
Justin's, I know Justin, like me neither.
Justin's like, well, I can relate.
I could see me wearing a dress to work before you.
Really? Oh my God. It's so That's true. That's how much it's so
I
true.
Can't see you wearing yeah. a dress. And no. yeah.
I do wear dresses, but I only wear them for like certain occasions. And they're, mm-hmm. you know, they're not usually super appropriate to wear to work. So work dresses. Yeah. But yeah. I know that was our last question, but I do want to ask one more. Did you guys like this live? Do you like when we go live to answer these questions?
Oh,
I'm
yes.
always very curious. I want to know because I'm having a blast.
Wouldn't we love the authentic response of someone being like, no. not for me. No thanks.
Yeah.
I don't. Mm-mm.
It's good to know. It's totally
here for
it. Like, I don't ever want to see your live faces on this yeah. social media again.
They're like, we don't like the back, fun.
Yeah.
Take your
yeah.
unhingedness, like, put it somewhere else.
Okay.
Out of here.
Okay.
Yeah. People are no, if you it. All okay. love the lives, yeah, we can try to do them more. Also, I would like to point out my mother, hi mom, commented, Jess has always been practical but leans to the color black, which is true. It's so true.
Okay.
Jess.
Yep, mom.
But now
right.
I have insight from Justin's reflections on black absorbs.
It's because Justin's eyes don't absorb any other color.
Yo, she's right. I have a real deficiency.
Also, I love
Franny
Coma
says not for me, dog. Please never come.
I love that your mom described you as practical. Because
if I have a problem, like a logistical problem, I am calling Jess before I call my partner. Like it's just what happens. Like I am gonna be like, I need to know.
Like if I end up in jail, I'm calling Jess because Jess would
100%.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah. Just as my first call, I get pulled over by the cops. Like, it's over.
I know.
I'd be like, let me phone a friend.
Yeah.
Let me phone a friend.
She'd be like, okay, practically, this is what you do.
Yeah, practically. You listen to the cops. You don't yell at
kind.
Them. You yeah. don't try to fight them. Like,
why not?
Poor lady.
Be nice.
What was that grocery store we were in Maine? When Kristen wanted to fight the lady?
Lady, like, was like, we were like giving her our IDs and passports because Bobby was there, and she was like, I can't accept this passport. And like, was like,
and then she followed us around the store.
She followed us around the store because I was like, Bobby, just leave and then I'll just buy beer. And then they wouldn't let me buy beer. And I was like, I straight up am about to walk out of
here.
And
so then
Kristen
was
going
to try to fight them. Yeah, Kristen was going to try to fight them. And then she was like, no, Jess is here.
Literally, that was my only thought is like, okay, if I do this, Jess would probably be disappointed if you.
It might be a compliment that they thought you looked like teenagers and you acted
no
like
teenager
teenagers.
No teenager is drinking
totally.
Allagash.
We acted appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair. Fair.
Okay. So it sounds like a lot of people like the live. Thank
cool.
you.
Okay. Good to know. Awesome. Thanks for the feedback.
Well, thank you all for joining live. Thank you all for 100 episodes. I know Justin said at the beginning, like, nobody thought we would get past 10. He's nobody. He's the only one that actually thought it. But in reality, like, we would not be doing this if you all weren't as involved. We do this for you all. We all love creating content, but this, having you involved, having you participate in polls, submit the questions, everything, we wouldn't do this if it wasn't for you all. So we appreciate every single one of you, whether you're a new listener, have been listening since episode one. We should probably go back and listen to those episodes and see, like,
oh my
what
gosh.
They were like.
It's like listening to old grad school therapy tapes. Like, I don't want to really relive it, like, in the way that I'm, yeah, or your old TikToks. Do you ever go back really far?
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh,
but please, as always, rate, review, subscribe. If you joined halfway through or at the end of this live, obviously this episode comes out next week, so you will hear all of that, and we will see you next week in group therapy. Bye.
Bye, guys.